applicants, and we're interviewing Arthur Gents from the Bradford Marsh this morning. Don Saunders is sitting in on this interview, and it's George Jackson.
We originally come from Chatham. I was born in Chatham, and our kites came from Chatham. And so there was communication back and forth, Chatham, you might as well say, to from the marsh to Chatham. Okay? Jack Israels, who was my uncle, he was here a year before we came to the marsh. So he was here. So being my uncle, there was also direct communication that way.
What year were we talking?
We came to the marsh in early spring of 1944. And Israels was probably 42, 43.
After the kites had come in 38?
Yeah.
Had you visited back and forth with them at all?
No, but the families knew each other. I mean, they went to the same church. So they were in the same community, you might as well say.
And grandma were, they were still living in Chatham.
Yeah, they were still living in Chatham. Yeah, yeah. So they were from the same church, same community, so they knew each other. And
you heard about all of the great potential coming to live on Howell the Marsh.
That's right, the great potential of Howell the Marsh was going to be. And my dad always wanted to farm. He did farm for a while with another friend of his in Sugar Beach around Chatham, and that was in the poor times, so that didn't go over very, didn't last very long. But they done that, and then during the Depression, he had a job with CIL Fertilizer in Chatham. So all during the Depression, he worked for CIL Fertilizer. He always wanted to farm. So of the great potential here, it'd be worth the try.
So you came up as a family, did you?
We came up as a family. Yeah, we came up, and actually, when we arrived here, Adair had the farm off of 27 Highway between the 3rd and 4th concession, and Adair also owned this piece of land here. Okay?
That piece of land is the corner farm. Is that
the corner farm from the town line, which is Highway 9 today.
Oh, yes.
And Canal Road. The Adairs own this piece of marshland here. The Brandon farm's over here.
Yeah. The Adair farm was right down on
Yeah.
What was Highway 9?
What's Highway 9 now? Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So Jack Israels knew Adairs. And when we come, that's the first place we went to was Adair's. Then, also had arranged to rent the house off of Ralph Davis from Schaumburg. And that was on the 8th concession of King Township in the Aurora Side Road. Right across from the present workyard, King Township workyard there. I don't know if you know the 8th line in the Aurora Side Road.
That's up on top of the hill.
When you come out of the marsh towards Schaumburg, the first road. So there was Holtz's and theirs. As a matter of fact, Hutchins, Mrs. Hutchins, you know her?
Mm-hmm.
They had the farm directly across the road.
That's it.
And we bought 10 acres of land that was right there. Mm-hmm. That would be the 1-2-3rd place east of River Road. On the south side.
Now, River Road is the road that runs down through what today we call Springdale.
And it's basically the extension of Five Side Road. It's basically Five Side Road carried on through.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically what it is.
How did it get to be called River Road?
Oh, I could tell you that. There was, I don't know whether it was Cherokee or Jack Israels, who found out that for kites were going to name the road. It seemed like in those days, the first person that put the name up on the road, that's what the road was called. But Kites had the signs all painted to put up for Kite Road. and somebody saw it and did not appreciate it. So Jack Israelts and Chip Rundy got together at midnight, painted the sign River Roads, and put them up. And the next morning, it was all hell to pay because the sign was River Road and the kites had the signs all ready to go. But those are the two that put the sign up River Road. That's how it got to be. And once it was posted, the law of the land, you might as well say, or the Times Inn, that was the name of the road.
The other one that's on there is, as you look on the new map here, we see Gillisview Road and Weber Road. Any idea how those names came to be?
I'm not sure how Hillsview Road came up. I think that was a consensus in the community.
Well, I think Addie Ellens mentioned something about how she knew how that one was.
Weber Road, that road was unnamed when I was on council. Mm-hmm. That road was unnamed, and what you call it? Mr. Weber lived on the corner, very nice gentleman, very, very good citizen, and they decided to call the name after him, Weber Road. Now there's a couple people upset about that lived down the road, such as Sweet and Ben Hart, but Weber Road stayed.
Okay. All right, for you, bought 10 acres of land in the marsh. Now what state was that land in when you came there?
Raw state. In other words, it was just grassland, because it wasn't in the bush area, it was in the grassed area.
Just a second, what the marsh is if you start right beside, the edge of the marsh, inland so far, you have what we call these arctics, you have a bush area, you have tamarack and cedar and all kinds of work. And then as you got close to the river, you had a grassy meadow. And this is where, and if you got the grassy meadow, all you had to do was plow down the grass.
That's right.
And you had marsh.
Okay. Yeah. So you just plowed down the grass and you had the marsh. That's right. So, but there was no roads. Okay. So everything that you wanted to bring in there, you had to carry on the back. And my dad literally carried the fertilizer and the seed and whatever else from, you could get off a trip roughly from there, you carry it down to the 10 acres. So that would be, get a map. I can just show you, just so you understand.
Okay. All right. Well, you're down here. Here's Highway 9.
There's Highway 9. Yep. Okay.
Highway 9, and you're coming up here to.
Yeah. So you carried it from here down to here. Mm-hmm. Everything was carried in and carried out on your back.
For how long?
Well, the Road Act came in 1945, Hall Marsh Road Act, and I think. Now, if you had a tractor, that was fine, but we didn't have a tractor. I can't tell you for sure how long. I think it was only a year or two. And we lived 5 years in the house of Ralph Davis on the 8th line. When we moved there, no hydro, no water, nothing, no modern conveniences today. Ralph Davis showed my dad how to wire one plug, and if you want more, you wire it yourself. He wired the rest of the house, but Ralph Davis was a farmer plus. He was also an electrician. So it was, before we moved out, there was electricity in the house. Mm-hmm. But people don't believe that you can live that way today. Oh. Then we bought, my dad bought, I guess.
By the way, just a second, if you have anything that you want to clarify, just ask. Don't keep in the position. Wish I'd asked him was such and such, but that's when you listen to the tape afterwards. You learn.
Well, I come back and fill you in.
Okay.
Then we bought 15 acres of land off from Kikes because it had a fire on it one time, and the Kikes weren't that interested. It was bush; it had to be cleared, and they weren't really that interested in clearing it. And we bought, and that's this here, 16 acres. It's on the old map. We bought that off of our Kikes, cleared it, and built a house on it.
So this is this piece of land is on the North Canal, west of Five Side Road. There's a 16 acre parcel there, which is right beside the piece that in this old 1949 map is. Right beside Peterborough Pike. example, this was part of their 90 acres that
that was part of their,
they
yeah.
bought from, they bought from they, Brandon.
They bought, yeah, that's right. And then there was Haydus that lived right beside us, right there. And they were there before we cleared this. They'd already cleared theirs. Okay.
Now, what was involved in clearing?
Chopping the trees down. There were some fair-sized trees. Chopping the trees, trying to get the roots out, and then trying to plow it with all this stuff in there. So you'd have two tractors. And if we say today what we'd done in those days, people would shudder. We had a crawler tractor, then we had a wheel tractor in front of that. Should have been the other way around for safety's sake, but it wasn't. And that wheel tractor would go up like this at times.
Is that a fortune?
And Dad would say, keep on going. Don't put your clutch. So you put the clutch in, the tractor go like this, and you couldn't pull the root out, because you had all stumps and roots. You had to yank out. And I drove that tractor many a day, it was shaking like that, you know. it was touch and go.
Was it a fortune?
It was a fortune, yeah.
Great fortune.
Yeah.
Crank it and start it.
And how we got the tractor, because after the war, you couldn't get a tractor. And my understanding was you had to have 100 acres of land. And you could get a tractor. We were only had 10 acres. Because there were very limited tractors available. But Ralph Davis, who we rented from, that was a 100-acre farm, he actually bought the tractor, gave it to us for the farm. That's how we got the tractor.
Well, you say it wasn't one of the old-fashioned fortunes. It was one of the, those what they called 9-inch forts, or was it more like that? It wasn't the old gray, the old one that was really squat. It had rubber tires?
Yeah, it had rubber tires. Yes,
sir. Yeah. It was what they call a 4-9-inch.
Yeah. Yeah, the gray, yeah. And they were a good tractor. They were a good tractor. I mean, you cranked it. The wood started. It had a starter, but sometimes it was contrary. You cranked it. And
it could be used like a car.
Yeah, it was
tremendous high gear. And you could go for rails. It could go about 15 miles an hour in high gear.
And not only that, but in the winter times, the tractor wasn't running good. You took the head off, pulled the pistons out, put new rings in, shoved it back in, you could do this all yourself. There weren't that high a compression on those things. So you repaired them yourself, and you ground the valves, and you were set for the next year. The tractor was in A1 shape.
Were those mostly tamarack that you were pulling, roots you were pulling, and cedar?
There wasn't that much cedar. Mostly tamarack, elm. Well, there was some elm in there. They were really tough. And then there was scrub brush, that's just your regular scrub brush, 5-6 feet high. There's quite a bit of that.
So then you did burn it?
Yep.
Burned it.
We burned it. Piled it up and burned it. And then you tried to plow the best you can, but there was places where you just couldn't pull out the roots. So you kind of worked around it. Now the ground was very rough and very not the smoothest for seeding or anything. You had to be very careful when you seeded that. Because you didn't get caught in front of the cedar, that they would plug the cedar up and you wouldn't have anything for a while. But it took about 3 years to get it settled down to within a reasonable working.
What was the canal bank like at that time?
The best way I could explain the canal bank is it was a cow trail with trees on both sides and grass in the middle, and very narrow.
What we're talking about,
If you want to see what it's like, just go down to Keel Street and go east, back into Rosenberg's there. That's the best example I can say what the canal bank is like. And that's pretty good compared to, because that's more sand. So it was like that. And you had the hard time if you met somebody. It was just a single path through there. And then eventually the town put a little bit of gravel on. And you get a little more traffic, and in the spring, why it was really bad, because it really boiled up. And there's many a time, as a kid, I made a few bucks pulling cars out. $1 a car, when they got stuck in it. They were on a Sunday drive or Saturday drive. And it took quite a few years before it got to be anything reasonable.
When you first came there, were you at the end of the travel portion?
No, Haydus were there.
Haydus were there.
Haydus were there before we were. They, yeah.
That was kind of the end of the road, right? Did you go most of your traffic go to the east?
No, we went.
Went to River Road, yeah. Then down to Highway 9.
Yeah, that was most of the traffic. But then the Haydos were there, and I think they were there a couple of years before we were. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they were.
Was Highway 9 much an open road, right, by 1945?
Highway 9 was an open road in 1945. Highway 9 was a road, basically, in 44 already. If you go back in the history of the marsh, when they dug the dike, they put the road through the marsh. That extended the road, because the road came both ways, and that was it, mm-hmm. to the 8th and to the marsh, this west road. In between was nothing. But once they dug the canal, then they had the road. And in 1930, when they done the Holland River drain, that made the whole road right through. Because they used the top of the dike of the Holland River drain, that goes basically west of the marsh. And it just followed the contour of that. So that's where the road was open. It sunk terribly. They spent a lot of money raising it the first couple of years. As soon as they put traffic on, because it was all peat, the road subsided. So that was always known as the town line. And that's how you go to Newmarket. It's a gravel road, very rough, because more and more traffic got on it, got washboardy. Yeah, so when we came in 44, we did travel back through. So actually it was 1930 when it became a road.
Did you say it was peat that was on?
Underneath.
Yeah,
subsided, yeah.
See, the
peat soils.
The problem was this section here, starting at about Five Side Road,
mm-hmm.
the section of the canal around through here, and then across through here, was all dug basically through the marshland.
Through the swamp.
This back land back here had a fair bit of clay. When they dug it right close to the bank, and they had quite a bit of clay when they did the excavation. So when the canal bank was built, it was a mixture of clay and peat. Back here, it was nearly all peat or muck. And when that dried out, it just goes to this. And so this whole section right around here, and all the way around here, right to Western Road, all had the same problem. They have spent really, I guess, likely $1 million trying to build a road on top of a bunch of
muck. And this was the worst piece of all. When Highway 9, when they widened Highway 9 this last time, there was 6 feet of peat taken out. And Highway 9 was constructed in the old canal bed.
You won't get into all that, because that's not the story.
No.
The story of the jazz.
No, I don't.
But you know, it is reality that this whole section had to be over. Okay, so you in 1944, came there and bought this 10-acre parcel, and you bought another 16-acre parcel. How many in your family?
How many in the family? There was 11. Boy, 7 boys and 4 girls. Originally, one sister passed away at 2.5 years old. Mm-hmm. And ironically, I'll say this, but ironically, it was a brain tumor. So his brother has today. They were both born in March, and they're both born on the 28th of March.
So what were mom and dad's names?
Mom's name was Israels. Actually,
what was her given name?
Her given name was Hendrika.
Hendrika?
Yeah.
H-E-N-D-R-I-C-A. Israels?
Israels.
And had they come from Holland?
Originally, she came from Holland when she was 16 years old. Her father moved to Canada when she was 16, my mother. Okay. They had a store in Holland, clothing store, furniture, whatever, mixed store in Holland. And times got tough, and then they moved to Canada.
So we can tell about 1930?
Yeah, let's see, she's 94 now. So about 16. She's 94.
Yes.
Well, she won't say for sure, but I know she said, to me, I know it was always, she was 16 years old when she came.
So it began in the 1920s.
Yep. Yep.
That's close enough.
And my dad came in 27, as far as I can figure out.
And they came to Chatham.
They came to Chatham, and they got married in Chatham. And they settled in the Chatham area. My dad came here all by himself. Times were tough in Europe, and he decided to come here and try his luck again. It couldn't be any worse, he said.
Okay, so who were the 11 members of the family?
Brothers and sisters, you mean? Who they are, their names, or?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, there is Effie, okay, which is now Effie Geertsema, maiden name, married name, I should say. Then there's myself, okay, Arthur John. Then there's John Henry, the brother that lives right beside me. Then there is Jim, okay, and he's the one that moved to London. Then there is Ray, and he lives in Israel now. Then there is Doreen, and I'm not sure where this other sister that passed away, where she fell in. Okay. Then there was Doreen, then there was Kenny, and the sister that passed away was Harriet, and then there was Nancy, then there was Marvin. Have I got it all? This is tough, you know. Oh, Bob. Now, Bob fits in between Kenny and Nancy.
It's quite interesting.
I hope I got it right, in the right order.
It's quite interesting, you see, now that we have all these Anglo-Saxon names. I laugh because we have a young couple.
Well, my sister traced the family tree of the Jans, and it goes back to England. That's where it originated. Yeah, that's what she traced back.
So, do very many you mentioned there are you and John live on the marsh?
We live right beside each other. We live on the marsh.
Is anybody your older sister? Do they live on the marsh?
Okay, they did live on the marsh. They retired now and they're living in Israel. Okay. Those three lived in the marsh. Jim worked for MOE.
Yes.
He was the one for MOE. Bob was the radical one. Dad, you don't know what the hell you're doing, Dad. You know, he was a radical. He moved to Orangeville and had a paint store. Sinclair Paint, and when they went out, he's got his own. Kenny and Marvin, Kenny and Wayne, both plumbers in Israel. Most of them live in Israel.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we follow on with the connection, it's the relationship to the marsh and so on. What's your earliest memory of shall we say, growing crops? I think you mentioned they're a clearing. But once you got how old were you when you were doing this clearing bit?
Well, crop wise, let's go back to that. I was 6 years old when I had to crawl up and down those fields of onions or whatever else we grew to pull weeds. I've done that ever since I was 6 years old. And the problem you had with clearing, when you cleared the land, you had these cutworms. Okay. Now, that's what we call them. I don't necessarily say they're just like grub in the grass.
Yeah, grubs.
Yeah. You had those. And what would happen, you'd see an onion falling over. So you'd scratch the ground, and you'd play, and you'd scratch the ground, you got them out, pinched them, and killed them. There was quite a few of those. And if you didn't do that, they overrun you. The first year, they almost wiped out half a crop. It was very tough the first year with those bugs. But crawled up and down those fields ever since I was 6 years old. And I can tell you another thing as far as the marsh goes, it would dry out. If you had a dry season, I think around the 50s was really dry. But as a kid, I could put my arm that far, right up to the elbow, in these cracks in the ground. They would open up that wide. And that's way back then. And another thing we'd done, Buck's Soil is very nice, they had a ditch in front of the barn. They had a little barn there. We'd jump off the roof and in the ditch, see how far we could sink in the muck. How far we could go down to the knees sometime. It was very soft landing. But then clearing the land, it was 5 years, about 5 years after we were there that we bought that other parcel land off of the Kites, and we started to clear it right away. And as far as the tall, my dad done most of the clearing. As far as the tall scrub brush, he just had a big long knife, just hacked it on.
Like a machete.
Like a machete, that's right. And the trees, while we had to cut them down by hand, pile them up. But that was a hard work doing that, because you had so many roots in the ground. The grassland was great, no roots, no wood, nice, everything smooth. The only thing is the peat would be lumpy at times. But when you got to the bush, well, you had twigs and roots and stumps, and every year the stumps would come up and you had to haul them off. And there's many a times you were cultivating or you were plowing and stalled the tractor because you had a root that couldn't take out. And some of those old tamaracks were as hard as a rock. They would be down 3 feet, or if you dug a ditch. And because all the ditches were dug by hand, and those things would be just like concrete, very hard.
What were the crops they grew?
What was the crops? Lettuce was one. Okay. We grew Chinese cabbage, we grew that, lettuce, onions, carrots. Those were the main, and celery, I should say.
And how did you sell it?
I can remember going from door to door in the wintertime in Toronto, in that residential area, and knocking on the door, man, would you like to buy some onions? Would you like to buy some carrots? The lettuce mostly went at first down to try and took it down to the so-called food terminal. It's in Lawrence Market there. Okay? With a trailer on the back of the car. And you took it to the wholesalers there. That's what made it in the airport.
You never, and did they, then would you just deliver it to them and then they would more or less say, well, we'll give you so much ahead or something like that? Or
you would deliver it to them and they'd say, we sell it on consignment. And if there was a hot market, you'd done well, and if things were backed up, they would say, well, this lettuce was no good, or it was rotten, I'm sorry, you have to take it back, or we gave it away as good as, you're at their mercy. So if you had a good broker, you didn't do too bad, but if you had one that worried more about his dollar than the farmer's dollar, you had a lot of aggravations. And that's why in the wintertime we went door to door in the residential area.
And how did you package the onions?
When we went door to door, in a 6-quart basket. You take a 6-quart basket of onions, a 6-quart basket of carrots, and ask if they would like them, and then they would supply something to put it in. And you went back with the 6-quart basket and filled it up again.
What did it cost? What did you sell for?
That I don't remember. That I can't. That's one part that I hated doing. I just hated doing that. I had to do it as a kid.
Selling is selling. Some people enjoy it. Other people, it's so hard.
It was like being a beggar. well, going to House Hill again.
How old were you then? 16?
Oh, no, no, no. I'd probably be 10, 9, 9, 10 years old.
And so your dad would drive the car down?
Drive the car down, there'd be a couple of us, and he would go from the door, he'd go one side of the street, and we'd go the other side of the street.
And did you travel the same area, did you go back once a month?
Yeah, we sort of went back, yeah, the same area.
Same as people used to sell eggs. I mean,
yeah, so you had sort of consistent.
I know my, yeah. I had an uncle, and they had a regular egg route, but they went every week. They had an egg route that they finished.
And the first year, the onions were stored in the living room of the house. There was no place else to store them. So we had the onions in the house. I have a picture of sitting on the front porch and the onions were out there before they were done. But they were in the living room of the house, the onions, because there was no barn. And the carrots were put in a pit. You know what I mean by a pit?
You've got to have a picture of a carrot pit.
You got a picture of a pit? Okay, because I have some too, if you did.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they were stored in the pit. I can remember digging the pit open in the wintertime, taking some out, closing it back up.
So well, we have a diary that was kept by Mr. Hurry here in Bradford.
Yeah.
Came here in 1830.
Yeah.
And he talks about these potato pits.
Well, I can tell you when I was talking to Hal Phillips. Okay. You know Hal Phillips? Okay, he was in National Belt there with the gas was sitting there. He says, we were talking one time, and he says, I can remember where the pit seemed to keep going down. If you didn't do it right, okay. If they started to rot in there, you had a real problem. And he says, it wound up the whole pit, just collapsed. We found out we had nothing left.
Yeah, yeah, it consumed itself.
Yep.
Well, you can have the same thing with grain, too.
Yep.
I remember going to see one of these great big grain bins.
Yep.
The whole thing, not the whole thing, but say 80% of it caramelized with just maybe this black charcoal. Or it was too high in moisture.
So,
what about the, you know, Del, when you came there, there was, the Verkikes were there, and the Israel family were there, and you came. Now, were there any other neighbors there?
Yeah, okay, Arnold Winters was there before we came. Mm-hmm. I think he came roughly the same time as Israel, so mm-hmm. Okay. There was Arnold Winters, and then on the other side, I think it was just after we came, there was Sneap. Okay.
And they don't show on this
No, map. That doesn't show on this map, but Sneeps were there before.
Okay, they were there, okay.
They
were there, they wouldn't have been there for very long, I would say.
No, Sneeps weren't there that long, but they were there.
They show on the map, but I don't know where it is. Okay, there's Sneep and then there's Sweep.
The Sweep, but Sweep was down here,
yeah.
At this end. Okay. Mm-hmm. Louis Fall's father owned this, and it was shortly after we got this that Louis started breaking this up. And then within a few years, all this started to be broke up. Sweep come in from here, and he was there. But Louis Fall's, then you had Steve Todd. Was Hungarian. He was there.
Yeah, these people came in. These people would have come in from Highway 9 up along the west canal bank road.
Yeah.
And rather than coming in from what we would call Springdale.
Yeah, they'd come in from there. And then later on we had Zoots. I don't know if you've ever heard of Zoots, but they later on, when this road came through, they had a piece. Toth was there. It would be this piece here.
Isn't that the name right there?
Yep, that's the name there. That's the piece there. And, they would fight. Some fierce. The police were there all the time. They didn't drink. And they would fight.
Just mom and dad.
Yeah. Oh, it was terrible. It was full of kids, you know. But in the summertime, they were in the field, bare feet, kids and her. And I don't know what he done. But on a Saturday night, they'd head to town, and then they'd drink, and they'd get home, and they'd drink, and they'd
We can't tell very many stories.
No, I can't tell very much of that. But she was a hard worker. She was out there in the field with the little kids and with the home, you know.
I think that's background.
That's background. But we bought, where I live now, presently, we bought that off of Zeus. They own this. We bought that off of them.
Now, the Verkikes, they own a very substantial block of land.
Yeah.
And it was all managed by the three brothers?
Three brothers.
They worked all together?
Yeah. There was Pete, Harry, and Jerry. The three brothers. George was on his own side. It was just the three brothers that got that. And the father moved to the ranch afterwards. And he left. But they had, and that's one thing, you see, the Verkikes, they also had some village here in Bradley. And Tony Verkike can tell you the stores or the buildings that they owned in Bradley from the Verkikes. They have that. They have three or four buildings that are owned by them. But you'd have to find out from Tony. He can tell you which buildings that was Tony Verkike.
And did any of you work together with them to sell their product, sell new produce or anything else, or was everybody working independently?
Everybody was working independently. We basically worked with my uncles on some stuff.
Yep.
Okay, Jack did us. But basically everybody was independent. Jake went to a market in London. Okay. Jack Israel's, Chip Rupke, Johnny Rupke went to Hamilton Market all the time. So they load the trucks at night and went to the market. But Jake done that for a long time. Harry and Pete didn't do that. They run the farm. But Jake always went to the London market.
So Pete Martin was the salesman for their products.
Right. Yeah.
Now what when you started, initially, like something like the size of their Verkikes, they had to have a workforce.
Oh yeah.
Where did that workforce come from?
They got people from Holland, basically. That's where 90% of their workforce came from. They had some locals, like I'm trying to think of now. Peter Lebanski. They've done quite a bit of work around the form types and for us and so on. Okay. They've done quite a bit of work. But the bulk of it basically came from home. And they basically built houses, the housing is, so a family would enter into an agreement to work for 1 year for this farm with X number of dollars a month.
Well, it was the same thing on the Highland farm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
They wanted to come to Canada, so the big thing was you'd be a company to work on the farm.
That's right. And that came up, that being what, around 45, so we've got a lot of that came up.
45. And the other little group with, and we had the same thing with their dairy farm. Dad had a connection with, there was Canadian National Railway or something,
yep.
CNR. They looked up because they thought they had the ships to bring people across from home. And then they had the railway connection and stuff. They had an immigration service.
Yep.
The CNR had an immigration service.
And we did the same thing. We had a house. We had a family in it. Mm-hmm. It was a lot. And the first few years in the wintertime, my dad worked for Cease Maitland. We had the alfalfa plant in Shelburne. Mm-hmm. And shovel out driveways by hand. So that the truck could get in to get the hay.
And then, of course, with 11 members of your family, you had a built-in workforce there that helped out quite a bit as well.
We all had to work in the farm.
Yeah.
And as I say, I worked there since I was 6 years old. When I was 15, I worked every day on the farm.
So what did you do? So what did you do about, where did you go to school?
I went to Shawmut. We lived on the 8th. And we walked to school. We walked down through our side road, or through the back. Sometimes we'd go the back lane. There are lots of the back lane. But Glenn Holtz was a big kid. And one of us by his hand, and we'd run down the highway. Yeah, went to Shawmut. Mm-hmm. And then after that, we went to the Hallamar School when they started it.
And were you, you would be involved with the Christian Reformed Church?
Yep.
When was that? So there wouldn't be a church there when you first came.
There was no church in Springdale at all. There was a church in the Hall of Ours. So we traveled to Amsterdam every Sunday. Yep.
And what, in summer and winter?
Summer and winter.
The winter would be sometimes would be kind of exciting.
And so would it be in the spring when the mud was on the road. Trying to get through the mud holes, spot holes. Yep, it was.
With the Springdale community, I know we talked to Secretary Session with Denver Kite and Leon Ratter and the Ellens.
Did they say how Springdale name derived?
No, we didn't. Yeah.
Okay, I'll tell you that one. Yeah. So just so you know, the Springdale that they built in the church. What are we going to call this area? This is before they built the church, but they're saying we call this area. So they asked everybody in the community, what should we call this area? And it was Marge Ruckey, Chuck Ruckey's wife, that came up with the name of Springdale. And that's the name that everybody accepted as a name for this year. That's how the name arrived.
About what year would that be?
That was just before the church was built. I can't tell you when the church was built. I should know. We had our 50th anniversary. 50 years. So.
The 50th anniversary?
No, the church was built 50 years ago. We had our anniversary this past year.
Okay, so that would be 53.
So it was about 52, I think, when the name of the Springdale name was. 51 to 52.
Okay. I would say it's, and then, of course, with the, when you had the church there, that certainly not that you gave it more so than when you were going to Amsterdam.
That's right. It, as typical of any community, when half the community or half a church leaves one area and goes to another. It's a little bit of hard feelings, but that's a dwindled. But the church was built, Tony McKenna built the church. Of course, as I said at our anniversary, he was the architect, the engineer, the builder. He built the church. Tony was the carpenter, sort of, okay? Mm-hmm. And he built the church.
Oh, yeah.
But then you had an architect and everything else. This is the way you build it. But then you just built it. That's what you thought was the best. And it was built, a lot of it was built out of Army barracks that would come from the baseboard, originally the church.
And the school started, we've got the story on the school there, so you had a school there for a period of time.
Yeah.
And it also helped to bring that whole
community together. Yeah. And Matt Brandon, who was the sole front, he was very good to the community too. Because the only way out that wasn't by side here was up through his farm up the hill.
Did you ever use that, go up that path yourself?
Yep. Yep. And it was used extensively on Hurricane Hazel. Very extensively.
Where did you get your mail?
At the top of that hill, from that path. R2 Tottenham.
R2 Tottenham.
The only one that has a Tottenham into West Bulberg. Why that one line, I don't know. But that's, there was a mailbox there. Everybody's mail went in that mailbox.
So I say, so all the folks who lived in Springdale, when did R4 open? our program.
See, we had a person show up until we got done the 8th. Mm-hmm. But then everybody else had it in that box, our M2 top. I don't know when our R4 came out. I really don't know what year it was.
So, just to go back a bit, so you lived at then when did you move to the Marsh?
5 years after we came, so that 44 and 549.
49.
Yeah.
So you moved to a house, was that the house on the canal bank?
We started to build it then, and we moved in at 15, that house. Yeah. That was on the canal bank.
On the North Canal Bank, where you live now.
Yeah. And fill material was costly to get. Trucks weren't that big in those days. But between the house and the dike, it was filled up with stumps and wood that we got out of the field. They just put some dirt on the top of it.
We talked to, we'll get into it in the Marsh, but we're talking about building roads, and so some of the roads on the Marsh are going to be stump based. It's good to put the stumps in the bottom of the road and start doing fill.
Yeah, some of them, yeah. And when they've done the roads also, they raise it up about 2 or 3 feet with clay, and that some down.
I guess the stories we have quite a bit of background information about the community, about the young people's organizations,
yeah,
the church, Addie, and I don't think we need to go into that again.
No.
Thank you so much. I guess the thing is your the memories of you talking there about.
Hey, the canal was the greatest arena, the first canal. It was 40 feet wide, and you just shoveled the snow off and made the rink as big as you like. And many of Saturdays, or almost every Saturday, there'd be a game of shimmy. Whoever wanted to come, came to the canal, put their skates on, and played a game of shimmy.
Yeah.
If you didn't want to play a game of shimmy with that group, you went a little farther over, you played a game of shimmy with another group.
Yeah. And they, as you were mentioning there about the fact that, and I got a kind of a kick out of it, immigrants.
Well, we're always called immigrants, that's 100% right.
No, not people like yourself.
Oh, okay.
No, but these were the new Dutch.
Oh, the new Dutch. They were referred to as immigrants.
So we had quite a little chat about the fact that, we can't refer to them as the immigrants in writing a story.
No,
you know,
that's...
But they were, Andy just referred to them as the immigrants, and how they came in, and these folks only spoke Dutch.
Well, hard to understand. I got a guy that's